We're very much involved with Yaakov Avinu. And you know that Yaakov is the most interesting of the Avot. And the reason that I think he interests us and we find him so compatible with our own way of thinking about things is that Yaakov made mistakes. He did things incorrectly. And because he did things incorrectly, it had to be redeemed from that incorrect, those incorrect things that he did. Because of that, we feel close to him. I mean, Abraham, he left the world that he grew up in, and he went to a new world and never complained. Yitzchak, he was just perfection. Whatever God said, that's what Yitzchak did. He didn't even imagine for a moment that he could disagree. But Yaakov, when he thought that he wasn't going to get the bracha that was given originally to Abraham, he lied. He fooled his father. He went in collusion with his mother against his father, who didn't, who he thought perhaps didn't really get what was going on. Now, that's something that we know about. We've all had that feeling that there's somebody who doesn't understand, and we've got to make them understand somehow. But there's another question, a more specific question. You see the pasuk at the top of the page, Vayomer Hashem la. You remember that Rivka didn't have children, and it was very wearying to her. And she prayed that God would give her children. And Vayomer Hashem la, Shnei Goyim, or Geyim, Goyim is the way we read it, and Gimel Yud Yud Mem is the way it's written. Bevitneich, two Geyim, Bevitneich, there are two of them in your stomach. Ushnei Lumim, two nations, Mimei Ayachi Paredu. They will come out of your intestines. Oh, I mean, you know, not exactly the way we would say it today, you know, our understanding of biology. But okay, well, we get the idea. And there'll be two nations, one nation, another nation. So each of these parts of the pasuk is explained by Rashi. So let's look at it. Vayomer Hashem la. Right, that's what it says, the first three words. Vayomer Hashem la, God said to her. Rashi, al yedei shaliach. Don't think that God, bichvodo, ke'ilu, came down to talk to Rivka about this matter, but there was a shaliach. Who is the shaliach? Shem. L'shem ne'emar. God spoke to Shem, beruach ha'kodesh, kind of an awareness of God. Vehu amar la, and he Shem said to her, Shnei goyim bevitneich. Now here there's a technical thing that you have to look at carefully. You see back to the pasuk, here it is. Just one second, I'm going to use my newfound power. You see, it's a little confusing the way it's written, but it says Shnei, the second word is goyim. That's how we read what's written in the Torah. But what's written in the Torah is Gimel Yud Yud Mem, which could be understood differently. Like, what word could that be? Gay. Geyim. Geyim, proud. Two proud nations. So Rashi says, Rashi says, Geyim Ktiv. So Rashi says, where's there an example of proud? Who's the proud? This is Elo Antoninus Rabbi. Rabbi is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who was the editor or the compiler to some extent of the Mishnah. And he was friendly with Antoninus. Antoninus was not one of ours, but was a friendly Greek-leaning type. Shelo, what is the pride? What's the pride? Shelo pasku me'al shulchanam, that all year long they had radishes and chazeret. Chazeret, whatever chazeret is, you know there's a problem on Pesach. Lo bimot hachama v'lo bimot hagshamim. They were able to make sure that they had these vegetables all year long, winter and summer. So that's the explanation that that Rashi gives to Shnei Goyim b'vitnech. There are two Goyim. There are two peoples who are proud. And Rashi finds an example with Antoninus and Rebbe. Okay? Think whatever you will about that. It's something very interesting to my mind. Most people eat the vegetables when they grow. This is mostly in the summer and sometimes in the winter, but the things that grow in the summer, you can't actually eat in the winter because they wouldn't be fresh. But if you bring them, import them from a warmer climate, for example, you could eat them if you were able to import them quickly enough. Okay, Shnei Le'umim, Rashi says, two nations, Ein Le'um, Ela Malchut. Malchut means it's organized as a nation. There's a kingship in that nation. Mime'ayich Miparedu, Rashi says, Mina me'ayime nifradim. They come out of your intestines. Zelirasha, Lirisho, Zelitumo. One is going to be a bad person, Risho. Zelitumo, the other is going to be perfect. He'll do things in the right way. Then Laom Milaom Yaemats, Laom Milaam, Rashi says, Lo Yishvu Bigdula, they won't be equal in their greatness. Kishizekam Zenofel. And one is up, the other one is down. V'cheinu omer amala acharava. I will fill in the destructed, that's which is destructive, nitmala tsur, ela bichuvano shirushalayim. So tsur was, when did tsur go up? On the stage, on the world stage, when Yerushalayim was destroyed. So before we look at the Rashi again, I just want to understand. I mean, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu insist that Rivka should have twins? I mean, Rivka was having difficulty having children. So we could say that the twins that she actually gave birth to, Yaakov and Esau, were the result of God's will. And since twins are statistically rarer than single births, why did Rivka need this kind of birth where there were twins? And twins are something special. They're kind of close to each other. They're closer usually, I mean, I can't say this with full guarantee, but this is the way I understand it, that twins are often close to each other, closer than a brother and a brother and a sister and a brother. I mean, the twins are something special. It's a special kind of attachment that only twins have. Only twins have. I mean, I realize it's probably not always true, but it is often true. So even though Rashi says, one is good and one is bad. Rashi says here, Zelirisho v'zelitumo. I'm underlining it. Zelirisho v'zelitumo. Each one of them went his way. Esav went to the way of wickedness, and Yaakov went to the way of perfection. Well, if that's the case, Why did we have two of them? I mean, It's true that Avraham Avinu had two sons, at least. He had more than two sons, but he had two sons that we recognize, Yitzchak and Yishmael. But because only one of them was born from his true wife, Sarah, it was never a question. There was never a real competition between Yitzchak and Yishmael, because Ishmael was out of the picture. His mother was not the wife of Abraham, but she had another standard. There was some other category that she fit into. So what in fact is the reason for Esav? Now we know that through his life, the life of Yaakov, until he comes back to Eretz Canaan, Yaakov was, life was made very difficult by the fact that Esav grew to hate him even more. He was a bad person. But he was able to find new reasons to hate Yaakov. He hated him when he was born, but he hated him when he took away his birthright. He hated him when he took away the blessing by fooling his father. He determined that he would kill him as soon as his parents died. He was the cause of Yaakov running away from Eretz Canaan. You remember, Eliezer was sent by Avraham Avinu to get a wife for Yitzchak. So Eliezer knew that he was going and God would be directing him. So Eliezer said, "Well, what if I find her and she doesn't want to come back with me? Should I bring Yitzchak here to meet her?" Abraham said, "Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yitzhak is not going to come to the house of Lavan to get a wife. You've got to bring her back to us." Now, there could be a variety of reasons for this, but I'm saying it's in the family. This idea that you don't go to Chutz La'aretz to get a wife. And here's Yaakov, who built his family in that place that Avraham said, "Don't bring Yitzchak there." So I think we could agree that Esav was not only the enemy, but Esav made Yaakov do things that he might not have done if there had been no Esav. And again, I ask, why do we need the story of Esav? What is Esav, in what way is Esav going to enhance the story that is being told? It's only trouble. It's only trouble. And we know that at the end, if you look at moving to the Perek Lamed Gimel, Vayisa Yaakov Einav. Yaakov comes back. He's got this big family, got a lot of animals, right? Then he's going to confront Esav. Vayisa Yaakov Einav, he lifted his eyes. Vayar v'hinei Esav. It's like almost he sort of was hoping that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make him disappear, the way the story is told. Vayisa Yaakov Einav, he lifted his eyes. What do you mean he lifted his eyes? He's looking all the time. But when you say that, you say it's like a revelation. He knew that Esav was there. He sent him presents. He sent him a message. Vayisa Yaakov Einav. Suddenly, he lifted his eyes by. Vayar. Vehu Esav ba. Guess what? Is Esav? He's coming along. What do you mean he's coming? each 400 people. I guess that was like his army. It's kind of like it looks almost silly. On one side is Yaakov. He has women, he has children, he has sheep. I mean, nothing that has anything to do with a fight or warfare. In those days that you get them together, you have to pay for them, you have to feed them. So he had 400 soldiers with him. Well, everybody was a soldier in those days. But Yachatz et ha-Yeladim, and he, Yaakov, split up the children, Aleyah v'Rachel v'shtei ha-Shvachot. He made like groups of them, right? He made these groups. I mean, it's hard to tell what Yaakov thought he was doing. I mean, what difference does it make? I mean, they had nowhere to run. They had no backup. There wasn't any, but I guess Yaakov wanted to show that he was doing something. I mean, what Vayachatz and Adin could do for the against the 400 soldiers of Esav. Vayasem et hashvachot v'et yaldehem rishonah. And then Yaakov did something which is not necessarily, might not be seen as being a great idea. He took the lesser wives and their children and he put them in front. And Leah v'Yodeh acharonim and Rachel v'Yosef acharonim, that in the order. I mean, I don't know exactly. I mean that maybe they won't be killed if they're at the end or in back. V'hu avar lifnehem. Hu avar lifnehem. He stood in the front, but he was they were all set up by Yishtachu Arza Sheva Pamim. I don't know anybody else who did this. He bowed down 7 times to Esau. Complete defeat. No question. There's no need to fight the battle. We've already lost. Ad gishto ad achiv, as he's moving in the direction of his brother, achiv. I mean, the word achiv indicates a change in Esav. Now, sometimes he's Esav, sometimes he's achiv. Achiv means good, positive, proper. Right? That's good. Vayaretz Esav likrato, and all of a sudden Esav runs in the direction of Yaakov, Vayaretz likrato, to greet him, Vayechabkehu, Vayipolat Savara, Vayishakehu, Vayipku, Vayaretz Esav likrato, Vayechabkehu, he held on to him, he hugged him, he fell on his neck and kissed him, and they cried. Then they cried. Let's look at the Rashi. Et Leah v'yiladeh achronim means achronim. Leah v'yiladeh achronim. Leah was in back of the Shvachot, the other wives, Bilhah v'Zilpah, but in front of Rachel and Yosef. So Leah was achronim, and Rachel and Yosef were achronim. Rashi says achron, not in the sense of the last, but in the sense of achron, achron, chaviv, that the word acharon here means beloved. Yaakov is trying to take care of them. the Leah and her children, Rachel and her son, Yaakov is trying. That's what achronim. It doesn't mean the lesser one. It means the more important one. Okay, now we're in pasuk gimel uavar lifneihem. That's Yaakov. Amarim yavo Torah shali lachem yilachem bi techila. That's what he said. If he wants to fight to wage a war, he'll come and he'll fight with me. I don't know exactly what Rashi thought about that idea. Pasuk Dalet, you see, Pasuk Dalet, Veratzei Sam unexpected. Esav ran. Vayechabkehu. Vayechabkehu. Rashi. Nitgalgilu rachamav. Kishera'ahu mishtachaveh. Kol ishtachvayot ha'elu. So Esav felt badly. He changed the way he thought about his brother suddenly when he saw him bowing down all these genuflections. Vayishakehu. Vayishakehu, you see the pasuk? Look at the pasuk. Vayipol al. Sorry. Rashi explains this. Vayishakehu. Nakudalav. There's a dot atop of the word Vayishakehu. I don't know if you can see it, but you see the shin? Vayishakehu. Vav yud shin. It's faint, but it's there. Vayisha. There's a dot, I think, in the shin. But if you don't see it, you don't see it. But you know it's there in the Sefer Torah. Nakuda love. And usually that kind of nakud is seen by Rashi as being a reminder to for a drasha. The Rashi says nakuda love. V'yesh cholkim b'davar hazeh b'braita de'sifri. He refers back to a Tanaitic Braita, it's found in the Sifri, which is the Medrash Halacha, in this case of Balmidbar, Balot Chasavachtet, Yeshe Darshu Nekudazot. There are those who say that the Neshikah, that the kiss that Esav gave to Yaakov was not true. He didn't really mean it. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Halacha Hi B'Yodesh Esav Shonei. He says, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, remember that name, Meron, Zohar, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Halacha hi, it's well known, it's a principle of our existence, V'yadua, Esav always hates Yaakov. So how come he's kissing him? Ela shenichmeru rachamav, his mercy. He felt this onslaught of mercy for his brother Uneshakov Beholibo at that moment. In other words, I think that the principle is questionable. How could you say that Esav always hates Yaakov if he's kissing him? Vayivku, and they cried together. So we all know that sometimes mitzvot evaporate because of the situation. The most famous of these situations is Shabbat. Pikuach Nefesh, Docheh Shabbat, there's a decision. That what God really wants is that you should protect life. And even though God has told us that this is Asura, that is Asura, the way we keep Shabbat is very important. Nevertheless, Pikuach Shabbat, Pikuach Nefesh, Doche Shabbat. Sometimes you have to act against God's will in order to protect life, which is also God's will. So it's not always clear. It's not always clear what the right thing to do is. It's not always clear to us how we should act. And the rule of thumb is that we try to act in accordance with God's will. That's the rule of thumb. But sometimes we get mixed up. Sometimes we get mixed up. I remind you of Shaul HaMelech, who did not act in accordance with God's will, which was that the people of Israel, should destroy the Amalekites. And Shaul HaMelech didn't do it. And the Tanakh mentions specifically he didn't do it because he had mercy on the leadership and the animals of Amalek. And because of that, he lost his claim to the kingship of Israel. Because he did not destroy Amalek when he had the opportunity to do so. So you might ask, but it says that clearly that he was being merciful. And you know very well that mercy is a divine quality. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun, erchapayim, rav chesed. These are the divine mercies. So if here is Shaul HaMelech saying to the Navi, he's saying, yeah, but I thought this was a higher goal, mercy. Why should I have to kill the people when I'm feeling the mercy? And Shmuel said to Shaul, there is no such thing as mercy against a divine command. If the divine command is to destroy the Amalekites, it's inconceivable that mercy would take precedence. Inconceivable. So we get back to Yaakov Avinu lying in order to protect his claim on the bracha. And we know that Yaakov Avinu and his mother Rivka, they said, we know that you can't, not supposed to lie. We know that you're not supposed to fool your father. And even you may think that he doesn't entirely take in the situation as he might, but it's not the way to do things. It's not the way to do things. But they said sometimes a secondary command deposes the primary command. The secondary command was Yaakov thought that he was supposed to get the bracha. In order to get the bracha, he would kind of reject a different command, which was not to lie and not to fool your father, to have kibud av va'em, to respect and to honor your parents. And Yaakov said, this case, in this time, in this way, I've got to overcome. So we see, interestingly enough, that who was it that engineered this mistake that Yaakov made? Oh, that was Esav. If not for Esav, there wouldn't have been the question. If not for Esav, there wouldn't have been the lying and the cheating and all of those attempts. And because of that, because Yaakov made the wrong decision, how do I know that it was the wrong decision? Because if you look at the end of the parasha, not our parasha, previous parasha, you see that Yitzchak gave him the blessing of Abraham, which had not been given away to either Yaakov or to Esav in the previous division of these. Wasn't given away at all. And since it wasn't given away at all, Yaakov didn't have to do anything. He didn't. He fooled himself. He actually fooled himself into thinking that my father probably doesn't know what's going on and will make a mistake, and so I've got to do something to fix it. But he was mistaken. And because he was mistaken, he was sent into exile. Of course he was sent into exile because of the way that Esav acted, but we have to agree that he deserved to be sent into exile. Who's not sent into exile? The perfect one. Yitzchak can't be sent into exile and should not be led into exile, even for an important cause. Yaakov, he was different. Yaakov was different, and therefore Yaakov's punishment was a punishment that he would go into exile. But you know, at the beginning of the parasha, at the beginning, I made like there are two more points that I want to make. The beginning of the parasha, the Ramban, the beginning of the parasha of Vayishlach, the Ramban says, you know, the Avot, answering that question, why are they called Avot? I mean, why not include Yosef and Moshe and Aaron? I mean, include everybody as one of the Avot. No, they're called Avot because they had a determining effect on the future of Jewish history. So when Avraham Avinu came, to Eretz Canaan, he made immediately to Shechem. Shechem, further north. And he went there because he thought he would daven. He should daven there. He would daven for his great-grandchildren who would have trouble in Shechem. You remember Shechem and Dina. They would battle, they fight a battle, and they would win. And Avraham Avinu wanted to make sure that they would win. How do you make sure they win? You get to daven. But they could daven any place. You didn't have to go to Shechem to daven for the benefit of his grandchildren. And again, when the battle against Shechem and Hamor. No, Avraham Avinu had to go there. And because the Ramban explained, that when you do something that kind of comes with the prayers that you make, you're talking about creating history. That's the Ramban's idea, right? Something to think about. Creating history. Ma'ase avot siman lebanim. What the fathers do, and that was Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, what they do is going to determine what happens to the children. So the Ramban says, when you think about Yaakov, you have to realize that Yaakov was the one who went to Chutz Laretz. He lived with his mother's family. He created his own family, children, animals, money, and he was able to get out. And so the Ramban says that this, besides being perhaps a punishment for what Yaakov did, the Ramban says this is the creation of the future. That in the future, the Jewish people will be punished The Jewish people will not be able to make it through their own history without the punishment of exile. And that's in the Torah, the Parshiot in the Torah that talk about that. They won't be able to do it any other way. They have to be exile. But Yaakov Avinu ensured that there would be a return. That's what the Ramban says. Yaakov Avinu ensured that there would be a return, which means that B'nai Yisrael will return to Eretz Yisrael. As difficult as it might be, as difficult as it will be for them to be in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, they have this guarantee that they will come back. And I imagine that the fact that Am Yisrael, in a variety of ways, always thought that they were coming back and that they would be able to remember that they were going back, and that they thought about the Churban Beit HaMikdash as being something that had to be reconstructed, not deconstructed. The fact that they thought all of these things enabled them to exist when all the other ancient nations in the world who apparently didn't have that kind of a dream, right? Not the Egyptians or the Babylonians or the Assyrians or the Greeks or the Romans or the Persians, right? None of them. They all got worn out and disappeared. They just don't exist. They don't exist. They are the possessors of dead languages. Dead languages are languages that nobody speaks. And the reason that nobody speaks them is because they're gone. They're gone. I mean, it's really amazing. And that even though we are not, overwhelming in our numerical achievement, we nevertheless are very much around. We're so much around. There's so much to us that we can really fight with each other a lot and find ourselves something to disagree with. That's really terrific. After all these years, we're not worn out. We fight all the time. So that's what the Ramban says. I'll tell you that there's another prophet that we have from the fact that Rivka had two sons who were twins. Twins, again, you know what twins are. There are different kinds of twins, but twins are usually seen as being close to each other. They're much closer to each other than two men or two boys born of two women who were the wives of one father, like Yitzhak and Ishmael, were not particularly close at all, right? Twins feel for each other, do things to each other. Sometimes parents of twins have to divide them up because they're afraid that they will lose their separate identities. I don't quite understand that, but it doesn't matter. But you know that twins are special. They are together more than a brother and a brother and a brother and a sister or a sister and a brother. I mean, they're really together with each other, really together with each other. So I don't know if that makes the question even more serious. So how come there were twins? Why couldn't Yaakov be alone on the stage, as was his father and grandfather to a certain extent? So his grandfather came from the outside world, so he was different. Yitzchak had nothing to do with the outside world especially. And here comes Yaakov. He has a brother named Esau, a brother who can hate him, but who also can cry together with him, to kiss him. That's what the Pasuk says, that the brother, that's Esau. He had it in him. He had it in him. So I say, you know, the Kabbalists, but not only the Kabbalists, also the non-Kabbalists, but the Kabbalists very clearly say that every person has a Yetzer Hara. Every person, if he's not careful, if he doesn't watch himself, I mean, it doesn't matter who he is really, what his name is or what his title is, every person has to watch themselves. Every person has to try to maintain the primacy of the good in him and the bad in him. Every person. And if you would ask me where we get the power, where we get the strength to be able to deal with ourselves, not talking about dealing with other people, but dealing with ourselves, I mean, where do we get the strength to do that? How do we get the strength to do that? So it may be Yaakov and Esau, brothers, twins, who had the capacity to work together, but also the capacity to disagree, to dislike, to try to outdo. But Yaakov, lying to his father, had also an aspect of beating Esau, which he realized was an important thing. For Yaakov, Esau was Yetzer Hara. It was the bad that was just there all the time. And somehow Yaakov knew that he had to deal with that. And so, Shnei Goyim Evitnech. You're not going to get rid of this, according to the Kabbalists. You're not going to be able to get rid of the inclinations that you have sometimes to deviate from good and go to bad. And in these cases, Yaakov is going to help you. Yaakov, in his victory over Esav, I mean, it's true, Esav came to Yaakov, but it was Yaakov's victory. Whatever he did, however he managed it, he had a family. He had children. He was the educator. He was able to deal with Esav. It wasn't that it was not fraught with fear, danger. It was. But Yaakov won. He won because he was still standing when the day was done. And even though Esav had a natural disinclination to treat Yaakov positively, here you have Esav giving in. And so if Esav and Yaakov, the twins that were born to Yitzchak, somehow represent the tension between the good and the bad, the proper and the improper, that we understand. And that Yaakov, I mean, is telling us that if we work at it, the good will be victorious. And the bad will just be gone, as Yaakov and Esav seem to indicate. So that in accordance with the Ramban, it's true that there's a question. Why was Yaakov a twin? But according to the Ramban, there may be an answer. Because we need the strength that Yaakov expressed or displayed against Esav within the battle in ourselves, even closer than twins. The good and the bad in us. The good and the bad in us. Okay. Have a good Shabbos. Be well.